Here we go. So thank you for agreeing to do an interview with me, Esther. I'd just like to start with when you first became aware of the community business movement, and what were you doing just in the lead up to becoming involved in that, and what were your motivations for getting involved in the movement?
Well, I suppose essentially it was looking changing jobs rather than a sort of idea of being involved in a community business movement as such. I had worked in Aberdeen in from about 1981 to 1984 in an urban aid project in Ferrier Sandylands, which is a housing estate which was an area of urban deprivation. That was really some community work project dealing with community education project, dealing with issues like, it's a lot of welfare rights work. There was some work with teenagers and young people. I did work with women as well. So play schemes, looking at housing issues, so it's sort of fairly typical kind of things that went on in community work projects in these days. Then after that, I'd worked for a year in London around a project called the Central London Social Security Advisors Forum, which again was very much about welfare rights and poverty issues and negotiating with Department of Social Security, as it then was, and lobbying around issues like board and lodging regulations for young people. I then came back to Edinburgh and worked at Scottish Education and Action for Development, which was concerned with third world, as that was the terminology then, third world issues, and it was education with adults, and trying to get people interested in how things were developing in newly independent countries in Africa, for example. I'm talking about the 1980s, it was probably independent for a while. Latin America was a big issue there. And I mentioned SEED because there was a parallel interest in issues in Scotland and Third World, and among other things, members donated money that went to projects. They weren't directly run by SEED, they'd be run by other organisations. And that was mostly around poverty, and also there was some women's projects, but that involved an interest in things like microcredit and economic development in say Bangladesh, for example. So that sort of ethos about economic development and social enterprise and cooperation was part of what SEED was doing. And I will just mention in the passing that the person who was key in setting up SEED was Alan Sinclair, who later went on to set up Heapwise. So, there's a link there to the whole community enterprise idea was certainly around in the time that I was working at SEED. However, when I went to work at Community Business Grampian, that was very much about wanting to move on to another job. And I was encouraged to apply for the job when it came up, because I'd worked with people in Aberdeen and kept up these links. Community Business Grampian had been established a bit before I went to work there, and I was trying to remember how long. It might have been running for as much as a couple of years, but maybe not, maybe a year or so, but it already had been set up, so I wasn't in at the beginning. I think they had, hadn't all been smooth going in terms of getting it up and running and trying to find a focus for the work. And my take on it would be very much that people were responding to what the funding opportunities were and doing what they could with them. Because as you will know, the urban aid programme changed in terms of the criteria, and it was reflecting government ideology about the importance of enterprise. So people were, I think, trying to do the best they could to use those resources to tackle urban deprivation. Now, in Grampian, it wasn't exclusively urban deprivation. I don't know, you probably want, well, I've finished going on about the work and then we can come back to what my work experience was. So I came into community business Grampian having already worked in urban, in Aberdeen and in areas of urban deprivation. And really was, excuse me, but with my work in SEED, had some sense of community enterprise and approaches to that as a way of tackling poverty. But I wasn't really coming in as a big enthusiast for community business as such, if you see what I mean. I worked there for 2 years, and I'll say later a bit what I eventually thought about community business as an approach. But what I went on to after community business was to be researcher and evaluator with the Pilton Partnership in Edinburgh. And the Pilton Partnership was a European funded, it was a project, it was part of the European Anti-Poverty Network, the third European Anti-Poverty Programme, I think it was. And it was more generous funding than any urban aid projects got, and it was a 5-year project. And what is interesting is that there wasn't really a big community enterprise dimension to the Pilton Partnership, although one of the things that emerged out of it has been the North Edinburgh Childcare project, which could be defined as a community enterprise, but we can talk about that more later if you like. So it's really kind of a succession of jobs connected with poverty in different roles and reflecting different political and funding climates.
Yes. And so let's stick with your experience in Aberdeen for a wee minute. If I'm right in thinking, part the community business Grampian, you would have been based within the local authority. Is it funded that way? Were you in a local authority base, or were you slightly detached from the?
We had separate offices. It was funded by Grampian Regional Council and the City Council, Aberdeen, and I'm not quite sure whether there might have been a little bit of funding from some of the other Aberdeenshire councils, because we supported that. One of the things that was interesting about Community Business Grampian, although most of the funding was dedicated to areas of urban deprivation, as defined by the Scottish Office, as was, there was some funding for work in rural areas. And we did actually support some projects, not necessarily with any big resources, but in ways that I think were helpful to them. And that was an interesting dimension of Community Business Grampian. And I don't know how much how that would compare with some of the other community business networks, whether they had kind of rural dimension or they were mostly urban. Just to give you an example of the rural ones, there was the Lewis Grassett Gibbon Centre. We gave a small grant to that when they were at a planning stage, and it was to help with the development of the design by people from Gray's School of Art. So that's very, it wasn't a big sum of money, but it was enough to help the process on the way. So it's actually nice to see that one still exists. There's another one that I don't know if it's still going or not. It's a community tea room in Clatt, which is the village hall in Clatt. It's the back of any heat. that was there in the summer, and again, I'm not quite sure what the economics of it would have been, in the sense that there's probably quite a lot of voluntary labour going on, but it was a lovely tea room, and that certainly ran after, you know, my time, but whether it's still around or not, I don't know.
I think there's still some version of it. My granny used to love that coffee shop. So I do remember her going on about Clack Coffee Shop. But, I'm not sure it would still be a social enterprise.
And the other one we tried to get going, it was harder, was in New Pit Sligo. There was a community shop and cafe in New Pit Sligo, but that was a bit harder work. It was hard to have enough customers coming in to make it viable, but so I'm not sure what happened to that in the long run. But
and so that's where you were
thinking. We had separate offices, and one thing, we were initially we were a bit out of the way, we were up in a sort of little industrial estate place, but then we moved down to an office that was much more central in town, but we had our own premises separate from the local authority. But the main support was coming from Grampian Region, and the key person who was Dave Simmers. Now Dave, I'm not sure what Dave's title would have been at that time, but it was social regeneration or whatever. But he, you know, was responsible for lots of projects. And also Ian Craig, I don't know if Ian's been mentioned, because he was in community education. Ian would have ended up being, I think, director of community education around about the time of reorganisation. I'm not really quite sure what happened after reorganisation in the mid-90s.
Okay.
I think the person who helped set up Community Business Grampian was somebody called Doug McKenzie, but I don't know what has happened to Doug. And I, you know, he wasn't working. By the time I started to work in community business, Doug wasn't involved with it anymore. So, you know, he'd been in community work at one stage, so I knew him from my earlier Aberdeen experience, but didn't have further contact with him, I think. And I guess the other point to mention is that in the whole community development world in Aberdeen, the College of Education was important, and particularly Bob Hamilton.
And so when you arrived, I think the idea of the kind of regional kind of Grampian community business, and there was, you know, Fife community business, Strathclyde community business, was to provide some support and also help kind of grow a network around community businesses, so that they could, you know, have a central point of support, but also kind of support each other in a network. Did that idea kind of, was that how things happened, or do you think things happened in a distinctive way on their own in Aberdeen, you know, different from what was going on down in the south of Scotland, or how did things progress with that idea? How much did the reality match the idea?
I think that they were we were definitely part of the networks. We'd go to meetings of Community Business Scotland, and there'd be training events and stuff like that. And the other network that was important was the credit unions. And in fact, I would say that the credit union, that was one of the things that Community Business Grampian helped start. Credit union, it was St Macha Credit Union at that time. And then it developed to become something else. I would say that the credit union was probably the big success of Community Business Grampian. So at one level, you're working in a way that's developing networks in the city for the credit union, but you're also part of the wider networks. And I know there was particularly a lot of experience in Glasgow. Cranhill was the one, John somebody, his name, surname, I can't remember. But there were some key individuals who'd built credit unions in the West, and that, so that model was certainly something that we were developing with support and help from others. Mm-hmm. In terms of the community businesses, I think we, you know, looking at your article, you know, that probably went down some different routes. You didn't have any managed workspaces, for example. The one that was successful, although it no longer exists, is with the Timber Kindergarten in Seaton. But that was only just beginning to take off, I think, by the time I left. My experience, you know, the model of community business is that you have community committees developing the ideas, and we had that for different areas. There was a kind of community business, obviously there was a community business granting committee on which the council and the local communities were represented, and we put a lot of effort into working with community activists. And one of the issues at the time was that people invariably started off with the idea that they wanted a facility in their area, and that community cafe has been terribly popular. And you had to work quite hard with people to say, look, this isn't necessarily going to be viable, and it isn't necessarily going to create jobs. You know, if you're situating a facility in an area that's dependent on a relatively small population and low incomes, it's not necessarily going to work. And so we did try to get people to think about something that they could do that would attract people from elsewhere to, in order to generate income that could create jobs. And I think that the Seaton Timber Kindergarten did actually succeed in doing that. I was looking online to see what happened to it, and it's unfortunately has closed down. And they appear to have, that relatively recently, I think about 2014 maybe, appeared to have tried to expand and set up another nursery in Bridgeton, and then that was hit by recession and it's folded. So, and there seem to be issues about the report from the Care Commission, seemed to have declined. So I don't know what any of that was about, but it did actually exist for about 25 years, I think, so that had seemed to have been one of the successful outcomes, or at least in the short to medium term, from community business. But the other thing that we were supporting, there were some food co-ops, very small scale at that stage, and I think it's quite interesting to see how things have developed over time. Like, you know, the sort of network of workers in Aberdeen, you know, that out of, I think, ideas about business development and things like the foyer would have been influenced by some of that experience, as well as CFINE. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I was wondering, so when you arrived back in Aberdeen, you know, so by the time you were with Community Business Grampian, that must have been later in the
1989 to 1991, yeah.
You know, and you mentioned how, you know, funding had changed and there was a greater emphasis on enterprise. You know, did you really find that a different experience from the community kind of education programs you were involved in the early 80s? What, you know, was the influence of enterprise evident when you returned?
I mean, that's a hard question to answer, in that we're often working with the same community activists. So it wasn't different in that sense. And that's what I mean about, you know, looking at your article, you talk about people coming from a community development perspective, and I think that's where we were coming from, was from a community development perspective. And really, it's not so much the idea of enterprise as a kind of concept, I think, but more about, are there ways of using these resources to try and help create some jobs? And so it really is about, what could you do to benefit the community with the resources that were available? Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I think, in a way, that something like, I think it is interesting that something like the credit union was perhaps one of the key successes, because that isn't really about enterprise. It's about self-help and mutual support and helping people manage money when they're on low incomes. And that to me was one of the key things that Community Business Grampian was involved in at that time, but I'm not quite sure what it then went on to do subsequently. Mm-hmm. So I think the enterprise idea wasn't something that people were overwhelmed with enthusiasm about, but it's just like, well, this is the funding climate, this is what we do with it. And I don't mean by that people weren't enterprising, people were, but if you think about, the energy and commitment to doing things for the community, but not necessarily enterprise in sense of economic enterprise. Mm-hmm. But obviously people were concerned about unemployment and jobs. Although it's a different situation from the west of Scotland, because male unemployment in Aberdeen would have been pretty low, and indeed even women, I'm not quite sure what was going on in the fishing at the time, because by and large in the communities who were experiencing urban deprivation, the people wouldn't be particularly benefiting from jobs in the oil industry, but a lot of women, for example, would have had experience of working in the fish industry, filleting fish and so on. But people had jobs like cleaning and so on. Kind of insecure, the kind of cycle of in and out of employment and on benefits would be a fairly typical one for people, but not the levels of unemployment clearly that would have been experienced in the west of Scotland at that time, or indeed when I was working in Pilton. It was like 18% or something when I was working in Pilton, but it wasn't like that. I think what people experienced in terms of deprivation was very similar. So living on low incomes, problems around housing and dampness, and perhaps to some extent in Aberdeen, exacerbated by actually being very affluent. There'd been a lot of money about, but the pockets of this areas in the city where people really have no access to that, and probably felt the contrast in ways that would have been demoralising.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think I've certainly heard that from other people I've spoken to over the course of this research. One thing I have also found is that there's maybe been some kind of quite seminal community development projects in kind of Wester Hills in Edinburgh, or Leap or Gark mm-hmm. in Glasgow. Was there a kind of comparable kind of community development project in Aberdeen that kind of a lot of people kind of seem to sprout from over the years, a certain area or estate that, a lot of people that continued to work into community business and social enterprise later kind of had some experience with?
I'm not the best person to answer that, actually. Dave's immersion me. But one of the things that did develop later was the Linked Work and Training Trust. I don't know if anybody's mentioned that, but that was basically, again, I must have had Urban Aid funding, I'm not quite sure. Again, Dave would be the person to speak about this. That was, I think, taking up the idea of job creation, but within community development. So So there definitely was a way in which there were a network of community activists. First of all, it would have been the people who were employed by the region in community education. So there was projects in different estates in the city. But I think through things like the Link Work and Training Trust, you'd have had actual people from the communities becoming trained in community work skills, and that some of them would have been subsequently involved in the FOI, for example, or in CFINE. So there is a link to these different projects over time, and links between the different communities in Aberdeen. But that it wasn't necessarily easy. Sometimes there was not, you know, people didn't. necessarily always get on well, or people fall out, or be rivalries and so on. But you can definitely see a thread of, you know, network of people and coming up with new ideas, and again reflecting funding environments, coming up with new ideas and taking that forward over time. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, the learning that went on with community business would have been useful, even though, I mean, I ended up feeling very, very critical of the model. You know, because I do think it was ideologically driven and it was quite cumbersome for what it was trying to do. And I'll say a bit more about that in a minute. But so I think there was a learning that came from community business that would have then transmitted itself into these other developments.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just before we move on to kind of what you did after, I was just wondering, as well as these kind of local networks, how do you think that scene in Grampian played into the bigger national and European projects of regeneration that were going on at the time? Was there a sense that, you know, you were part of this bigger, you know, idea of regeneration, or did was it very much just we're doing what we're doing in this area?
I think people were tied in to networks. I don't know about the European dimension, but we were definitely tied into networks like Community Business Scotland and the credit union networks, and going to meetings in Glasgow and Edinburgh and wherever. And I think that's, as far as I'm aware, again, I get this through talking to Dave, that he's always been involved in all these networks, and whether talking to Scottish Office, Scottish Executive, Scottish Government, etc., over the years. So, yeah, we were connected to that. On the other hand, when I say we, I mean I'm talking about the paid workers. Some of the community activists who are on the committees would also have been involved in these kinds of training exercises and networking with people across Scotland. So it wasn't done in complete isolation, although I think we did do some different things in the area and had the rural dimension. Although some of the other places we do, like Fife, for example, must have had some rural enterprises. I'm not terribly sure. Can I say just something about what I thought about the model? Because I think I did end up, and I think this is referred to in, you know, when your article talks about, say, Keith Hayton and so on, and reviewing community business, or Alan McGregor, remember Alan McGregor? I don't think I shared this with anybody at the time, but you began with community business thinking, oh, it's quite a lot of money, because compared to some of the previous urban aid funding, it seemed quite generous. So you could get funding for a community business manager, for example. But then when I sort of thought more about the kind of businesses that people were thinking of developing, and it often was a kind of small business model, And I looked at the kind of small business, I looked at the literature on small business development and realised that often what happens here is you've got a lone entrepreneur or partners or a couple, you know, a couple whether married or just or partners, whomever, who really put all their efforts into building up the business. And that's really what a lot of small business development takes off successfully. And it doesn't necessarily grow to create lots of jobs, but it is something that people have to put sort of heart and soul into in a start-up phase for quite some period of time. And in community business, you didn't have those sorts of entrepreneurs. You had a committee trying to work out what they might do to help their area or to bring money into their area. And you know, there was a lot of discussions. These weren't necessarily the same things. You know, to say people often wanted facilities for their area, but those wouldn't have generated enough money to be viable or to create jobs. So with a lot of discussions around trying to find out what would be a type of business. I mean, we explored things around in it. There's some kind of environmental recycling thing. I think Tayside got into that, I think, but maybe a bit later. You know, so we were exploring ideas like that. But I decided in the end that really the resources weren't in fact that generous, despite seeming to, if you were really trying to develop something that would generate more than a couple of jobs here and there. And secondly, you had the structure of a committee that was actually very cumbersome. And on the other hand, you know, we put a lot of time into supporting community activists and training and so on, and I think certainly the credit union that was successful, but they themselves weren't necessarily people who were thinking with a kind of business perspective. So I ended up thinking that the model was not really very helpful to people. It was not as much money as you initially might have thought, and that it was really quite a cumbersome model to try and use for business development, and it didn't match up with what was typical small business development as successful trajectories, if you like. But I don't think I shared that with anybody at the time, so I was interested to read, you know, about the subsequent reports. I thought, yeah, that was my experience. And I think one of the reasons why the credit union was one of the major areas that got developed, because that not is a different kind of thing, and definitely was meeting a need.
Mm-hmm. So do you think there was still there was quite a struggle or not necessarily a struggle, but like a still a bit of unresolved thinking around this idea to create businesses that are mutually beneficial for the whole community?
I don't have a problem with that as a concept. And nor would have local people would also have been happy with that, but it really was hedged in by a lot of criteria about how you had to do things, you know. So it's not about social enterprise. I'm not saying that social enterprise is not a useful idea. It is, but it's like how it gets organised and structured, and how where the money comes from, and how it's administered. I think is what I would say the problem was, which was it really was, I think, a very unwieldy kind of program. And and some of the things that have developed subsequently have probably been, like the FOIA or CFINE, probably been much more effective and successful, actually. Mm-hmm. Although, again, I think they have their ups and downs and depend on external funding, so that issue seems to be always to be there.
And so is there anything, if you could go back and kind of start those initiatives again, which is there anything you would have liked to have the freedom to do that you perhaps didn't feel like you had were able to do at the time that you think would have been
I suppose I would have favoured the approach that was about how you create, if you're going to go down a social enterprise model route in areas of deprivation, I would favour a model that would get resources in from the outside, that would look from doing something that could actually create some jobs, rather than the facility. I mean, that seems a bit mean-spirited, and a facility for the community. I don't mean, you know, clearly people would have welcomed having decent facilities in their communities and deserve that, you know, but as a business model, that wasn't going to be particularly viable. So I think I would have, you know, things like the nursery idea, I do think was the right kind of direction to move in. And I think, but I suppose the other thing about the model is that it depended on, you had your local community being, and the local community would benefit, but you also depended on being able to recruit good managers to run the businesses. So you weren't necessarily getting the manager from the local area, and so I think there was a tension in you know, how you generated the maximum benefit for local areas. And as a job creation mechanism, not sure it was ever going to generate very many jobs.
Mm-hmm.
But the experience was clearly different in other bits of Scotland. I mean, you know, some of the Strathclyde examples, I think, were much more successful. Although I noticed, I think, again, in your article, there's a reference to somebody being critical of Heatwise as a model, because my sense would have been that Heatwise was very successful in generating jobs, but there might have been issues about community control there. So it's not easy to resolve, you know. The things that we were interested in was how could you use the money to help in some way in areas where there was a lot of poverty, and also supporting the local communities to manage the resources. And I think we did achieve some of that, and that's. But I mean, again, in some ways, I think I would have liked people to have a freer hand with the resources, actually. And again, Suzanne was working in the Pilton Partnership. It was a third anti-poverty programme, and there'd been problems in one of the previous ones about fraud. And so the scrutiny... Pilton Partnership had a full-time accountant. The scrutiny of what was going on was really detailed, and and that seems to me to happen a lot with these initiatives for communities, you know, disadvantaged communities, that they're inspected and scrutinised in ways that are probably too controlling. I'm not saying there are no problems with fraud. That does sometimes happen. So that, you know, there's I'm not quite sure what the right balance is. But I think people having a freer hand with the resources actually would have might have helped other kind of things develop.
Yeah. So let's think a little bit about what you did after. Community business campaign, did you say it was
91
that, yeah, you moved on from,
yeah,
there, and is that when you went to the Pilton
Partnership? I was actually I was based here at Edinburgh University, but I was employed by Glasgow University, but it's a contract for the research evaluation was won by Angus Erskine, who was then in social policy in Glasgow. But because the Pilton Partnership's in Edinburgh, there was a deal negotiated that I would be based in Edinburgh University. So I had an office along the street, no, next door actually, number 23 Buccleuch Place.
And what was the partnership? Was this one of the schemes that was meant to engender community participation in redevelopment? What was your experience of that? Was it a successful?
But complicated. the Pilton Partnership, as I was saying, it was a 5-year programme with much more generous funding because it was European Union funding, and again it was sponsored by Lothian Regional Council and Edinburgh City Council, and we had a committee that had sort of, you know, there was whatever the local enterprise company was called was on it, and then community activists and councillors, and Scottish Homes as well, because housing stuff is, I think it would have been Scottish Homes at that time. It's good because these things keep changing. The participation element was a key part of it, and I did various interviews about this as an evaluation researcher, and it was really quite interesting because there was a lot of wariness of each other, not you know, on say the enterprise people or and some of the community activists, not so much the region and the district, because people had already had experience, you know, through community development of regional workers, and clearly the key support was coming from the region, I'd say, more than the city council, although some of the councillors. No, the councillors on certainly the councillors who were on the committee were from both region and district were very supportive. I think one of the things that was actually in terms of participation at an early stage, and again I joined the project after it had begun a bit. Somebody had started off as an evaluator and that hadn't worked and they needed somebody else. And they'd done a consultation with the local community, and that turned up one of the big issues as childcare and people wanting a facility, which wasn't something that was in the initial plan. And that got explored throughout the time of the partnership, involving, for example, there was a local childcare action group, but we went on a trip to Belgium to go and visit, you know, projects that were part of the European Anti-Poverty Network to have a look at how people did things there. And then a plan was developed to set up a childcare centre. And again, this took, I'm not quite sure how long the process took, because it was well underway by the time the partnership came to an end. But it wouldn't have all been dried and dusted by any means, because they got a purpose-built facility, and the idea was both to create jobs for local people, to give them the training, to provide childcare for local but also outsiders. And as my understanding is, that has really worked. It's still going and is a kind of thriving centre. So in a sense, you could say I don't know how they would define themselves, you know, but it is like a community enterprise that has created jobs for local people.
Mm-hmm.
But actually, having said that, the idea of community business as such, a community enterprise, wasn't particularly key within the Pilton Partnership. There was a range of things going on. There were things like food cooperatives, health projects, credit union, North Edinburgh Arts. You know, there's lots of things already happening in Muirhouse and Pilton that the partnership linked into and supported, as well as kind of doing this research-based consultation on what people wanted, which did actually then influence the outcomes, as well as having a lot of participation committee level.
Mm.
Yeah.
And so was this part of a kind of personal journey from your post at Community Business Grampian into more kind of research type?
Yeah.
And was that something that you were interested in doing? Were you kind of going, you know?
I'd previously done some research about women's work in Scotland, women trade unions in the late 1970s, and then I ended up doing work in adult education, voluntary sector, community work. So I think. The idea of doing research was attractive, but I like the combination of the Pilton Partnership, because you were, you had your foot in two camps. You were doing the academic stuff, but you were also in there, in, you know, actively involved in debates around community activism, community development, what would be good for the community. There's quite a lot of documentation on the Pilton Partnership, if you're interested in that. I did write an article, some with Angus Erskine, about participations.
Yeah, I've read
All right.
bits and pieces. I think it's interesting that you've highlighted that, you know, some comparable schemes such as the nurseries sprung out of both, you know, up in Aberdeenshire, the Timber Kindergarten at Seaton, and then did you ever come across the Play on Wheels initiative, which I think would have been in Pilton in the same amount of time?
Yes, that rings a bell. But you see, in Aberdeen, when I was working in Ferrius Anderlands in the early 80s, we had a play bus. Mm-hmm. Oh, it wasn't just in Ferrius Anderlands, it went round. There's a play bus. So,
So it's interesting that these things are happening despite actually quite different funding mechanisms and partnerships around them.
Yes.
Do you think perhaps some of the driving force was this, for these things, was the shifting demographics around women and employment and those kind of changes, or what, you know, how are these things bubbling up?
At a general level, yes. I mean, I think what's interesting is one of the things that happened in Pilton, and this was a bit of research that Angus Erskine did, I wasn't involved with it, but it's around lone parents and their aspirations, because, you know, there were a lot of lone parent households in Pilton and Muirhouse. And what they found, if I remember rightly, was that quite a lot of the lone parents were sort of scoping, as it were, what might be the possibilities for them in the future, but not able to do anything about it at the time that they had, when kids were too young. So the childcare was definitely an issue there. But also, when you're talking about how do people get employment, there's a problem about, even once a kid starts school, the length of the school day, if you're travelling outside of the area to a job, getting back in time. So it was the idea that actually lone parents were pretty clued up about what the situation was and what they might do in the future. But, you know, at a particular point when children of a certain age couldn't really do anything about it. So you can see how the desire for a childcare facility came out of those, you know, both the consultation but the bits of research. So I guess, yes, a growing recognition of that as an issue. And we're talking about the early 90s by this time. So,
I think that's very interesting. I was also hoping to talk to you a wee bit about if there was a kind of gender aspect to these kind of movements, both in terms of the kind of roles that women, you know, as professionals in community education, community development, in the community business movement played, and those women kind of coming up from the communities and participating as kind of community activists and stuff. Did you feel that, you know, there was a gendered element to the roles people ended up playing and the initiatives that, you know, sprung out of them, or was that not as important as, you know, elements of just poverty, class and...
Well, my experience in Aberdeen was that the key community activists were mostly women, and that was certainly something that was well appreciated by the work, you know, the workers, I think, and the people who were going to stick with things and put in the effort and the time. I mean, that, and I think what was interesting, when we used to go to Community Business Scotland things, you just sense that, and credit union things, that in the West Coast there was a lot more men involved, and I think that reflects patterns of unemployment, and so that there's partly a difference going on there in terms of labour market and you know, unemployed men looking for something to do, that people were probably more in and out of employment. That's a big generalisation. Obviously there was male unemployment in Aberdeen as well, but women were the mainstay, and that was true in Pilton as well. And you know, just so, and I think that was understood without there necessarily being a lot of gender discourse about feminism or women's power or so on, or well, but there was some of that around, you know, that and I was an active in the women's movement. My colleagues knew that, you know. In Community Business Grampian, we ended up, after I went to be, I think my title, I'm not sure it was coordinator or director, whatever it was, but after I went to be that, but where it was an all-female staff, there had been a man, his name I can't remember, who had that job before, but when we had new jobs, it was always quite hard to recruit in Aberdeen, because it was an expensive place to move to. Well, and I think also a lot of people would have just perceived it as being very remote. So it wasn't necessarily easy to get a big pool of candidates for jobs as they came up, but we ended up with an all-female staff. And as I was saying, it was before we recorded, there were quite a lot of women around in community business jobs at that time. But I don't remember specifically talking about, you know, gender as in the work context. You know, as I say, people would have been aware of my views. But it wasn't like a big issue, you know, in a sense of we weren't having lots of arguments or anything like that, you know. And I think it was because, as I say, that, you know, it was clear that it was the women's commitment that was at community level that was so important. And talking about the Pilton Partnership, several of the councillors who were really helpful in that were women councillors. Not all of them, there was male councillors as well, but you know, so there's that kind of. In fact, I've mentioned Eleanor McLaughlin, who was a provost at Edinburgh at one point. Eleanor had come out of a community activist background, and she was on the committee representing the city at that time. So you had, in fact, she was provost at the time. So yeah, I don't know if that contrasts with some of the things you've been finding out elsewhere, but my experience of work at community level. So always the women were the key players.
Mm-hmm. And do you think that's connected to just women's role more generally in kind of social reproduction? That, you know, if you are slightly on the peripheries of, you know, economic production, you take on a role in this wider kind of social production, keeping communities together, you know, helping out, and that kind of more reciprocal economy that supports community life?
Probably, in the sense that, yes, there are obviously different patterns of participation in the labour market. Also, I think simply, you know, people's responsibilities, the division of labour over caring, because quite a lot of involvement comes out of you know, think about with play schemes and mother and toddlers groups. I forgot what I said, mothers and toddlers groups, kind of play schemes, and a lot of that kind of work. So the you know, kind of comes out of the circumstances of people's lives. And clearly people do get something out of it, though, of being in the group, the social support, of being on committees and learning skills and, you know, but they're also thinking beyond their immediate, you know, and I think that capacity to think beyond your immediate needs and your own family needs and think about communities, you certainly saw that capacity to develop in women. Where the men, I also think there is an issue here, and I suppose, I mean, this is off the top of my head, but probably around masculinity and status and how men deal with unemployment, long-term unemployment, and not being able to be breadwinners, you know. So I think that there probably is something in there at a psychological level. I don't know if anybody's researched it. I mean, that's my impressionistic, off the top of my head, view there. But yeah.
So do you mean that, you know, men facing long-term unemployment are less likely to get involved with a kind of community orientated activity because that's seen as kind of woman's work almost, or kind of inferior to a proper job? Or,
well, I think sometimes well, I suppose two things. One of the things I was aware of in Aberdeen is that some of men might be active for a bit and then they'd get a job and then you wouldn't see them. Whereas that would be less likely to be the case with women who might be in and out of part-time employment. So again, it's partly reflecting the labour market. I think for some of the men who got involved, they were looking for a way of finding status and might want to be more controlling. But that's, you know, I'm only thinking about a couple of individuals here, so I wouldn't want to overgeneralise. And I think that, how people deal with very, very difficult circumstances in their lives and how they find a place to get some sense of self-worth, I think there is a gendered sense to that, but I don't know if I can articulate that in any kind of specific ways. Yeah.
One thing that I think is emerging out of some of the kind of historical literature on community development at the moment is that sometimes being part of a local scheme or a local co-op, something like that, was a way to kind of show willing in terms of, you know, wanting to, you know, avoid the stigma of being unemployed or being impoverished. Do you think that was a, you know, you mentioned that, you know, a lot of these kind of lone parents would participate in the schemes and were very kind of attuned to looking beyond when the kids were in school or the kids were older. Do you think that was some of the motivation for them participating in some of the projects you were part of?
I think probably people might well perceive that as something that would open up networks and opportunities, yes. Mm. Yes. But I think a lot of it does just come out of a genuine commitment to mutual support, really. Mm. And I'm not saying here that everybody gets on well, because they don't, you know. The quarrels and faction, whatever, you know. But I think, and that might not necessarily be in a very concrete sense of thinking opportunities would come out of it. But, I mean, again, going back to something like the Aberdeen experience with the Linked Work and Training Trust, that developed after I was in community business. It was in the 1990s. But that's very specifically about a route into a training that would result in a professional job for people who'd already been active as volunteers in their community. And that did work for some people. It could also be very challenging for people, as I'm sure other, you know, those experiences went elsewhere. It can be quite a difficult process to go through, and I don't know what sort of feelings it would produce in other members of the communities, actually. Mm-hmm. So in some cases it would probably be quite clear that those sorts of opportunities might arise, in other cases less so. And it would be interesting to research that, actually. I think it would be quite hard to find out how much, you know, people did come to other opportunities through community activism, because quite often what you find is, yeah, some people do end up in jobs, but some people, they basically do it for very long periods in their lives and stick with it, you know.
And I have to ask you, although it's slightly off topic, but so the kind of the women's movement in Scotland at the time, you mentioned how people were aware that kind of you were a feminist, but that it was almost kind of running in parallel to this kind of regeneration and community work. Do you expand a wee bit more on that, or I'm trying to kind of get a sense of how connected, and or was it just a separate movement with its own issues, or were there kind of points of crossover?
Oh, I think there'd be quite a lot of points of crossover, that, you know, in terms of people like me working in community and adult education, and people in I mean, at that time I was involved in NALGO, National Associated Government Officers, you know, the Women's Committee, and so these ideas about women's role at work and women's rights at work, and how you provide your service in terms of who would be the people that, you know, community education service should be, whose needs should they be meeting. I would say yes, that there was a recognition of that, and it wasn't just the things like, you know, the childcare and play schemes and so on, which are really, really important, but things like domestic violence and being aware of those issues and helping give advice and so on. And, I'm sure, I didn't do youth work, but I'm sure there would have been issues around contraception and stuff, you know, people getting advice and education and things that would help, hopefully, in some way or other. But yeah, just, you know, the generation of people who were working in community education at that time would have been women, not all of them obviously, but quite a few of them certainly would have been influenced by that, and clearly feminists. There were certainly other people in Aberdeen at that time, Kate Phillips and Powers, for example, Margaret, oh, what's her other, Margaret, who became a councillor, oh, I forget, that's terrible, can't remember her name, So I mean, again, I'm not saying it wasn't necessarily part of your daily life or you're having arguments, but, you know, about what it meant to be a feminist, but it certainly informed what people thought their work should be about and which groups you would support. Mm-hmm. And, you know, in my experience, the men I worked with were the professional workers were supportive of that. Sometimes, probably some tensions with some local activists, but, and I don't mean that as, again, about explicit arguments, but just probably, you know, this kind of power.
Maybe the power struggle.
Yeah, but maybe seen being too bossy or whatever, I don't know.
Yeah, that's interesting. And sorry, just trying to gather my thoughts a wee bit. I think that's, I've covered everything I wanted to explore with you, Esther, but is there anything you've been thinking about that we haven't had the chance to talk about?
I Yeah, I think just, you probably already said this, like one of the distinctive things about Grampian, I think, was the rural element. And that was, I enjoyed that. It was very different, obviously, but, you know, from what was going on in disadvantaged communities in the city. But that was a nice, interesting lot of variety.
And what was it that the rural communities were kind of in need of? Were their needs different? Was the type of support different? I'm thinking, you know, you're maybe working with a lot, you know, quite small populations
I think it was that combination of a facility, a local facility and some local employment. And I mean, again, I'm thinking about CLAT, it were paid workers, were probably a small number part-time, and it was seasonal, it was just, you know, just been through the summer months. So but definitely provided a facility, you know, and obviously there was a whole network of all the people producing all the home baking and stuff. Mm-hmm. So kind of social community support, cohesion. And in Lewisgrass at Gibbon Centre, that was a bit different, obviously, because it was about a commemoration of the writer. But that was also about a cafe and community space that's used for facilities and so on. Yeah. So that combination of facilities, social support, some employment, I think was probably what was being looked for and sometimes achieved in rural communities.
Yeah. Sorry, I interrupted you there.
No, that's okay. I'm having a look at my notes there. I think that the kind of work that I was involved in, I've already said this really, it's about community development perspective, but the enterprise was taken on because of the funding made available, but I think people have gone on to learn things from that they've used in positive ways in subsequent initiatives. And but a lot of that, and as I have said, is still, I think, dependent on external funding, either government grants or local. Not quite sure what the local authority's locus is in this anymore, but I'm sure Scottish Government is still really important in terms of resourcing these kinds of initiatives. I don't know, how much research is. I would be interested if in your research the sense of what the people from the local communities actually have got from these kinds of initiatives. I sort of have more of a sense of the projects that have arisen, but I suppose one of the things I was saying about community business that I think it was never going to create a lot of jobs. And I don't know whether there'd be other strategies for job creation that might be more effective. I don't know, but it would be interesting to know to what it is that people from local communities who put time and effort into these initiatives have got from them, whether that's jobs or other types of skills or benefits. I would be interested if there's anything.
as a movement and as a moment, there has been a lot of learning, and in some ways there's learning in terms of the infrastructure of what became, you know, the social enterprise sector.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, we've got, I think there's an opportunity to look back and explore more widely in terms of learning for communities and that kind of thing. I don't think we've really begun to dig into that yet.
There is another comment. I do think that by and large the people who were working in community enterprise, community business jobs at the time I was would have come from a community development perspective. And I think sometimes, you know, there wasn't necessarily an awful lot of business knowledge or skills there, so probably trying to combine those things was a big challenge. Yeah.
Okay, great. If you're happy to stop the recording there,
yep.
Do that. Great.